You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with yet another Tim May podcast, and joined, as usual, in the cockpit of this, really, this high-performance airplane by Awesome Ward. Awesome, welcome once again to the Tim May podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here, and great last week to be back in a real airplane and traveling around with Berm, and then to make it safely back home to get here to talk to you about some football. I can't ask for more, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, my wife and I flew down to Houston and back on Southwest Airlines a couple of weeks ago for a reenactment of my one of my nephew's wedding that he had the year before, and that plane was packed to the gills. And I don't know what other airlines everybody else is flying, but it seems like a lot of them are flying Southwest, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think they could start giving us more than four drink options, but
yeah,
you know.
That is funny. That is funny. You're right.
And stop worrying about where everybody is standing to get on the plane when we're crammed in 6 inches away from people and every seat is filled. But yeah, you know what? Like I said, like I told you the other day, you know, with people around Texas and the football, you know, football practices and hitting, and if last week kind of felt like there was a lot of progress being made, it felt a little more normal. And you know, we know that, you know, June 2nd is looming here, and we can maybe feel that in this Buckeye state. But, you know, you and I both got the shot. I feel like things are starting to trend in that right direction. And as you said, when we talked on Thursday, you know, Gene Smith is now expecting that they can maybe have that baby completely filled for the Oregon game in September, the home opener, which would really be something. After everything we've been through, I don't care if you played that game at 6 in the morning, it would be – completely packed, and the atmosphere would be incredible. And
yeah,
I hope we get to see that.
Yeah, that's why I asked Gene Smith that question on that video conference, which otherwise was for, you know, I don't know what we call that, masseuse gate, you know. I mean, sure, there's a gate involved, but I digress, because I think that was the more noteworthy thing from that press conference. But I digress.
Yeah.
You know, since then, I've had a chance we didn't talk about this either, but I had a chance to talk to G. Scott Sr., the father of G. Scott Jr., who, as we know, that was as big a news as anything else in the spring, in my opinion, was a movement of him, of G. Scott Jr., from wide receiver to tight end. And as G. Scott Sr. points out in my interview, I mean, you know, basically he's all for it. And so is G. Scott Jr. Matter of fact, I get the impression that was their idea, or at least G. Scott Jr.'s idea. And G. Scott Sr., as he points out in the interview, received some guidance from Richard Sherman, among others, about how, you know, this is an evolving football, college football offenses are evolving as we speak. And it's all about the mismatches, as you well know, and creating space in the mismatches. And G. Scott Jr., now up over 220 pounds at a tight end spot. And, you know, and we use tight end loosely anymore, too. Pardon that pun, yeah. Because, you know, 1 minute a tight end can be right up on the line like the old days, and can be in the slot. The next can be in the backfield, can be in motion, you know, doing all kinds of things. We've seen that evolve over the last 10 years, especially with Ohio State football under Urban Meyer and Ryan Day. And so that's just a euphemism almost for getting another big guy on the field who can create a mismatch, especially in the passing game. And, you know, like you and I talked about before, I mean, this is probably good news. That move was good news in terms of getting G. Scott on the field in what otherwise was going to be a crowded wide receiver room.
Yeah, and I don't want to go overboard with this, because G. Scott Jr. was a little bit limited throughout spring. So maybe we would have talked more about this move if he'd been fully healthy and able to make a chance. But one thing that I know Brian Hartline loved when he had – you know, G. Scott Jr. in his room last year when he arrived, was that he was such a willing blocker. You know, he was probably the most physically imposing of those four that were in that class, right up there with Julian Fleming. But willing to do that dirty work, to do whatever it takes, and understanding that that was going to be part of his role. And I say that because, you know, when Jeremy Ruckert or Joe Royer arrived, you could, you know, they were skinnier dudes, not true tight ends. Certainly we've talked ad nauseum about Jeremy Ruckert's transition to becoming that all around tight end. I think that G. Scott may have a better, maybe not better chance, maybe just a better understanding of what that will take and what that entails, at least, you know, making that move. That's, it's probably not fair to even look at it that way, because it's not like Jeremy Ruckert never had to do that or didn't understand that was part of his role. But I just think that, I only say that to bring up the chance that I think that can really work for G. Scott, because that was always part of his game in the first place.
Yeah. And then like I point out, you know, we'll get to the interview here and just real quickly, I don't want to keep giving out the nuggets of the interview before we actually have it. But the bottom line is, man, that's the cool thing about, I think, players, and I think it's going on a lot of places in the country now, but I mean, you got Ryan Day sitting there figuring out new ways to do stuff. I mean, ways to get people involved. I mean, even in the offense, you know, when you've got like three or four tight ends and you can play them all, but they all have a little bit of a different role. Not only does that give you depth and versatility, but it keeps people happy. You know, it keeps people happy in your roster. They're going to play five or six wide receivers. I mean, you can see it coming. Why wouldn't they? You know, I mean, if Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't catch about three or four passes in the opener at Minnesota, I'll be stunned. I mean, we all saw what he's all about, but look at the guys he's competing with to get on the field this year. And that's what's interesting, but you keep people involved. But the other thing is you just keep the pages moving. You keep flipping pages on what you can do offensively, and it makes you that much tougher, not just to deal with, but to prepare for. And I think that's as much a part of as anything. You agree, right?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you look at somebody with his recruiting profile, that growing up around, you know, success, understanding what that takes. If I think that they Ohio State has a bunch of players that accept coaching. So if Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day tell you that this is probably how you can get to the NFL, well, there's enough evidence at Ohio State you're going to compete for championships, and you have, we've talked about the last several weeks, this pile of draft picks. So I don't think that, you know, it doesn't work to everybody, right? Jameson Williams just left and, you know, maybe didn't listen to some of the feedback he got from Brian Hartline. But, you know, by and large, a lot of these guys are listening to that. And if it means a position change or a different role, they're open to doing that. I think G. Scott is a perfect example of, like, you could go somewhere else and be a starting wide receiver, almost anywhere else. You know, maybe four or five programs in the country where he wouldn't just go automatically be a starter. But, you know, that's not the case at Ohio State. Well, do you want to go play at a lesser level? If you do not want to be in the college football playoff, are you going to take a chance that you know what's best for you to get to the NFL, as opposed to what other people might tell you, which in this case also includes Richard Sherman and, you know, conversations with his family? I just think he's a good example of what's going on right now, why Ohio State doesn't have a tremendous amount of activity going in or out of the portal.
Yeah, he's also a good example of the BS that floats around sometimes, because as his dad points out, you know, this idea that he was going to – that he would be next in line to transfer and stuff, just kind of like, what are you talking – that person has no idea, you know, about G. Scott Jr. and what he's really thinking, you know. And we all know – and, you know, he also gives his opinion on what happened with Justin Fields during the draft buildup and things like that. And you got to remember, G. Scott Sr. is in sort of our business. I mean, he hosts a news talk show with Ursula in G and Ursula in Seattle every day. Matter of fact, he was prepping for it while we were getting ready to have our little conversation. So you know what? Forget all the buildup. Without any further ado, let's get to my conversation with G. Scott Sr. As promised, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, G. Scott Sr. Or is it Senior G? Help me out here.
It's Senior. Senior.
There's a G Junior, and everybody knows who G Junior is. The new budding, tight end for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Hey, let's just jump right in it, G. I've been looking forward to this for a while, man. You know, you're the host of a radio show out in Seattle called the G and Ursula Show. I think it's what, on 97.3 KIRO in Seattle. And so you're used to talking a little bit, but I think you and Ursula pretty much do news talk, right? Give opinions about things that are happening around the world. Let's face it. A lot of mess has been happening around the world to comment on, but I wanted to get your comment on, you know, the move of G. Scott Jr. to tight end in the spring and stuff. And just how did that sit with you and him?
Well, the idea, well, first of all, Tim, thanks a lot for having me on.
Oh, sure, man. I didn't give you that chance. Really? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, that's all right, man. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate you having me. The idea came from Richard Sherman. That's where the idea came from. Richard Sherman had talked about it, and he had talked about it a few times. Well, one afternoon, Sherman and I, we go to lunch all the time, and we're at lunch. And he said, I'm trying to tell you, you got to listen to what I'm telling you. The NFL game is changing. The game of football is changing. It's hard for people to talk about something that they have not seen yet, right?
Yes.
And so he started talking about the evolution of the player and how the wide receiver is becoming faster and moving. So for an example, if you and I were talking right now on your show right here, if we were talking 10, 12 years ago, the prototypical wide receiver that everyone's looking for is Calvin Johnson, right?
Yes.
6'4". But here we are, we're talking today on your show, and for some reason, Tyreek Hill plays the same position as Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Yeah.
Well, that is just another example of what you are seeing with the game. One more example before I go back into the point that Sherm was making. We just recently heard what Urban Meyer is doing at Jacksonville with their new running back, having him do wide receiver drills. Why? Because the days of a running back not being able to catch a football, that is going to go in the past. You need the Alvin Kamara type threat in your backfield. Well, all Richard Sherman was saying is most of the time, because I said what most Buckeye fans said when you've probably heard about G. Scott Jr. moving to tight end. You probably said, well, how much does he weigh? Right?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know how much does he weigh?
Yeah.
How much does Steph Curry weigh, right? When you start talking about weight, you start talking about 40 times, you start talking about dimensions, nobody talks about what Jerry Rice ran in a 40. Right? Like, all those things are just, they're just there, right? It's like you need a resume and you need to have graduated from this school, but just because you graduated from this school doesn't mean you're going to be good at this job. So to go back to the point is, I kept saying, well, what about his weight? Well, the thing is with G. Scott Jr. is his weight. I mean, he was trying to fight there and stay at 205. And you guys probably heard the sound bite about the cheeseburger and everything like that. Well, hey, it's kind of true, right? Right now, he's moving right now. I mean, he's already above 220 right now at this time, but it's not about the weight. So I'm excited about him getting to this role. I'm excited about him having the opportunity to learn from Kevin Wilson. Kevin Wilson is someone who, I mean, in the college football world, who has a big name, who's very known to especially teaching of blocking, considering the offensive line background that he has. So to be able to get that, because I believe that G Jr. is already knows how to be a route runner, right?
Yeah.
Like he knows how to be a route runner. And so what he's going to have to be good at is he's going to have to learn more and get better at blocking. What does that mean? That means that sometimes you're going to have to take on that tight end. That defensive end. Yeah. Sometimes you're going to have to take on that bigger linebacker. But at the same time, you're also going to have a chance where you have that mismatch problem at linebacker. So all in all, I'm excited for him because when I gave G. Jr. the recommendation from Richard Sherman, it was something that he slept on. And then he took it to his coaches. And that's the beauty in this, all this, is that G. Jr. is – He's a young man now. He's an adult. So all of these decisions, they have to be his. And I think that he took those, that decision, he took it to his coaches, and they were all for it.
Yeah. And, you know, what we're leading to here, Jay, I mean, I love how we just jumped into this because, you know, football is always evolving. Sometimes it kind of goes backwards a little bit. But here's the thing. We're talking about G. Scott Jr., and we're talking about tight end. But we're just using tight end almost as a euphemism because – really, the way teams, especially Ohio State, are using their what I call their second tight end on occasion. You know, I'm talking about a flanker kind of guy, a guy who gets into the slot and stuff. Well, you're calling him a tight end because he meets in the tight end room. But, you know, one of these days, all of those guys are going to be in the wide receiver room or vice versa, you know, the receiver room. And you're exactly right. And it's all about creating mismatches. And like you just pointed out, there are going to be times when G. Scott Jr. gets on the field this year and he's going to be running a route against a linebacker or somebody, and it's going to be a mismatch. And that's what Ohio State, that's what Kevin Wilson, that's what Ryan Day, they live off of that kind of stuff. And you can envision that too, right?
No question. There's a very genius coach in the NFL was actually doing it first. I've actually gone through and watched some old stuff of the New England Patriots when they had their tight ends, right?
Yeah.
As they were doing their thing. And they had two of them out there on the field. So they were kind of already doing it.
Yeah.
Well, here pretty soon, you're going to start to see more of it, you know, and people say, well, what's another example of the game changing? Well, who are the top fullbacks in the NFL right now?
Yeah.
Case in point,
yeah.
Right? Like the game is starting to change.
Yeah, well, it's interesting about Ohio State. With Kevin Wilson occasionally, they'll put a tight end back there and actually at fullback just barely. But the tight end, a lot of times the second tight end, is the fullback in the formation, even though he doesn't line up at fullback. He is the lead blocker on occasion. You know, when they do quote unquote an ISO play or something like that, which is rare, but, you know, in zone blocking schemes, et cetera. But it is amazing how they still rob Peter to pay Paul, but they won't admit they have a fullback. It's just this other player, you know, playing another position. Yeah, you're right. I mean, and the great thing about it is, this is why I would think you were probably really excited when G just opted to go to Ohio State is, you know, Ryan Day is right on the cutting edge of a lot of things offensively with the aid of Kevin Wilson, et cetera. Do you sense that too about Ohio State's offense, or just what's your take on that?
You know, that's a great question, Tim. And if I answered that question a year ago, right, and we all know what we've been going through during this pandemic, I would have answered that question by saying, sure, I love Coach Ryan Day, cutting edge when it comes to offensive minds. He is someone that you consider one of the top minds in college football, no doubt about it. But now we are a year later, and that answer – or the question you just asked me, the answer I give you is a little deeper than the offense. Hmm. And I think that what Coach Ryan Day does for this team, for this program, and in particularly for my son, Ryan Day is a leader of men. Wow. You see, I've been around the NFL for 18 years. I've seen the best of the best. I was there when Russell got there and Richard Sherman got there and Cam Chancellor got there and Earl Thomas. I've seen the best of the best.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing that I've learned, the most successful football players, what you don't see is what makes them great. And that's off the field, right? What you see on the field, if they're playing football at the Shoe, you're at the Shoe for what, 3 hours? That's 3 hours of competition. You don't see what goes in before that. That's what Ryan Day is a master at, is a master at developing men. So when I see developed here on Twitter, when I see developed here, most people probably think, yeah, he got bigger, stronger, faster. Shout out to Coach Mick. We all know what he does.
Yeah.
But when I think developed here, I think about what the Buckeyes do as far as developing the young man. That is the deep part about that. And so to wrap that up, and I didn't mean to bore you guys.
No, that's great.
My answer
is
what I'm trying to tell you is this. this offense, this football, it'll come and go. One day it's gone. But in order to be the best football player that you can, you got to be the best man that you can.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Being the man relates to being the great football player.
Yeah. You know, and this is what's interesting. You're, 3,000 miles away as the crow flies or as the big plane flies? I mean, how far away are you?
Yeah, like 2,500 out here in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, you got a lot of frequent flyer miles, I'm sure, building up. Well, not last year, maybe, but you know where I'm going.
Right.
You know, your son picks Ohio State. I'm sure you were in on the decision, but that's a long way away, man, to trust men with taking care of your son in all kinds of ways. Was that reinforced? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. It's the greatest decision that he has ever made, being a Buckeye.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting, right? I have to admit, there has been – I've seen it on Twitter. I've seen it online. And they say things like, well, G. Scott Jr. is probably the next to transfer. And it's tough to see that because, in all fairness, if you knew the story or if you even knew G. Scott Jr., you would realize that that's something that you probably wouldn't think of, you wouldn't say. Most people would say, well, why would he not transfer? Because he didn't get the playing time. Well, how many people do we remember how they did as a freshman in college, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so G. Scott Jr., my son, he got to go to a national championship game. He got to be a part of that. And if you don't think that there was excitement that my son was able to even get on the field and be in the game, like a lot of times kids and families dream of those opportunities,
yeah.
Just dream of them. So to have that happen reinforced the idea that he wants to continue to be there and be a part of the program and to get better. And man, has he's night and day. Like he's changed so much, Tim, over the last year because of being a part of this program.
Hey, you know, when you look at Brian Hartline, you look at Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day, like you just pointed out, you know, how would you describe Kevin? We talked about Kevin a little bit and Brian, you know, Brian helped recruit him, et cetera. how would you describe those two guys? You've already talked about Ryan. I mean, a builder of men, a developer of men who happened to play football, you know, and Kevin and Brian, Brian Hartline played in the league for what, 10, 12 years, whatever it was at Ohio State before that. He understands the ups and downs, the pitfalls of the game on and off the field, et cetera. I mean, it is kind of hard to imagine where you could go, where you would get a better exposure for your son. I'm talking about to people who have been there, done that, than those guys, right? I mean, I'm not trying to get you to do an ad for Ohio State. There's some place you go where you might get the same, but probably no place better than that, right? I mean, of guys who can teach you along the way of what's coming, much less what just happened, you know?
So I think Brian Hartline, I think that he gets all, you know, everybody knows who Brian Hartline is, right? Like,
yeah.
He, you know, Brian Hartline, superstar recruiter, wide receiver coach and all of that. You know, I want to take this time to talk about I call him the unknown. I call Coach Kevin Wilson the unknown. And I do that on purpose. And it's kind of funny because everything that I know about Kevin Wilson is through my son. Right.
Yeah.
Like you don't really, how many times you pop on Twitter, you don't pop on Twitter and you don't really hear about Kevin Wilson. But if you look and you research Kevin Wilson, you see like, whoa, this dude's got a pedigree a little bit. Right. You start seeing all of the tight ends that have gone through him and what's his track record of tight ends coming into the program and going to the next level. You're like, whoa. And so I asked my son, and I hope I'm okay telling the story, but I don't think Kevin Wilson, anybody will mind. So I asked my son, I'm like, hey, what's this coach Kevin Wilson like? And he's like, he's tough. I said, what? He said, he's tough. So let me give you an example. So one of the first days that my son gets ready to go into the tight end room, I guess they had some kind of something that happened out in indoor field. And after they were done, they were supposed to get ready to go into the meeting room. And my son was kind of, he said he was just doing his normal kind of lollygagging a little bit. And he'll kind of walk in and stroll in. And he strolls in kind of too many seconds too late, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And there was kind of a sternness from Coach Kevin Wilson. And so it was right then that a precedent was set with my son where he's like, uh-oh, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that part of it, like, I think that is the beauty of what Coach Ryan Day has assembled with the coaching staff, right? And it's for the coaching staff, they might be different, but they're all on the same page. And that's phenomenal, right? And
yeah.
So the what's being taught in these rooms, because Tim, let's be real. We can sit here and talk great about Ryan Day till we blew in the face. But if what's being taught in those rooms, if that isn't being taught the right way, then you don't get the development. So I can't say enough about
yeah.
the coaches.
I was going to say, I want to go back to something real quick before I move on to something, you know, about people talking about people, you know,
yeah.
When you had your conversation with Richard Sherman and he's talking about how, you know, about G and stuff and about this move and things, he's seeing it from his perspective, right? Of what's tough to cover out there. What's the evolution offensively that's going to make it even tougher on defenses, right? I mean, that's real eye-opening for you, right? I mean, I would think that's pretty cool.
Richard Sherman explains football. I talk about it on Twitter all the time. He makes it so simple when he talks about it. But in that conversation, when he was talking about the move to tight end, he was explaining about, of course, his teammate, George Kittle, and yep. what he does on the field. And then he also was talking about it is right now defenses have not caught up yet with that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They know about the Z and the X and then the Y tight end. They know about that. And they know about the running back there. Okay, cool. You know, if you see that wide receiver motion, DBs, alert, all that stuff. But what happens when you do have that tight end that, like you said it earlier, let's say he does line up in the backfield as almost a fullback. When he comes through the line of scrimmage, is he coming through the block? Or is he coming through to not block and run a corner route? So
yep.
you just don't know. And so it's hard to defend in that situation. So that was just more of him explaining to me. And what Richard Sherman was doing was he was explaining to me how tough it is from the defensive side of things, right?
Yes.
To really understand what's going on with that offense. And he was trying to explain why it's a mismatch. This is why with the linebacker position going forward, a lot of these linebackers in the future are, they're looking for Bobby Wagner's, right?
Yes.
They're looking for, and I know, I don't know if I'm supposed to, I got to give this player love, even though he played for Penn State, right?
Yeah.
But they're looking for the Micah Parsons.
Yep.
Right. That these are the because those are the linebackers that can come downhill and they could cover that fast guy.
Yeah.
They could do both.
Yeah. I mean,
so
you're talking about, I mean, the thing about it is they're going to be looking for guys they haven't, like you just said, they haven't seen before 10 years from now. It's going to be a totally different game. I mean, clearly, you know, especially with the contact rules and things that have been going on. And, I mean, it's just crazy how the game is changing. You know, I wanted to ask you before we move on to that next thing. I'm not getting you to make a prediction, but do you see him becoming a factor for Ohio State this season, just based on what you're hearing and stuff and the feedback you're getting? Do you see him becoming, because it appears the opening, the opportunity is there if you follow my drift.
One of the biggest mistakes that I don't want to put this on anybody. Let's just put it on myself. Okay.
Yeah.
One of the biggest mistakes that I can make to you right now is to predict what my son will do for Ohio State.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be, it would be terrible. It would be wrong because I don't know. I don't know what Coach Ryan Day's plan is. I don't know what Coach Kevin Wilson's plan is. But here's what I do know. And here's what I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you that G. Scott Jr. will work the hardest that he can to be the best player that he can. Just recent, this most recent break that they went on, he wanted to stay. He stayed back and going to the Woody every single day, not just to work out, but to watch film, to be better in that case. So, Brother Tim, all I can guarantee you is this. I guarantee you that he will try to be the best player that he can be. And I think that that's what all this is about, right? Like, you gotta love it. And that tight end room, you know, that tight end room. And yes, we all know that Jeremy Ruckert is the only returning tight end that's taken a snap outside of Cade Stover. But that room, those are some talented guys in that room. So, and right now, my son, if you ask me, my son is behind all of those guys because he's got to come in there. He's the new guy in the room. He's got to come in there and he's got to learn from them and Coach Kevin Wilson.
Yeah. Bottom line is make them play you, meaning, you know, do all the work. They don't know all the answers, do all the work, make them play you. That's what, you know, a lot of guys, I'll tell you what, that's what's interesting about Ohio State though. Gee, I know you keep up. I mean, I've covered Ohio State football since 1984. I was around it a lot even before that, you know, when Woody was there and then the start of Earl Bruce and all through Earl Bruce, blah, blah, blah. But my point is I've never seen depth like they've got on the offensive side of the ball ever. Defensive side, you know, some things need to be proven on that side of the ball. You know, we're not talking about that. But I mean, do you see that as a father from 2,500 miles away? I mean, the wide receiver core, you know, yeah, Jameson Williams just left and went to Alabama, which needed a guy to take the top off the defense. Funny how that happens, but I digress. The tight end room, like I just said, with your son added to the tight end room, dude, there is some talent in that room, like you just pointed out. The offensive line has never had more depth than it has now since I've been covering this team. And then running back, I think they're loaded at running back. Just need a guy to step up. And, you know, it could be Master Teague III. I think Trevion Henderson is a guy to watch. And then you got three stalwarts trying to be the starting quarterback. I'm just from afar, what's just your take on the talent your son is immersed in?
There's a lot of talent at Ohio State, man. It is a beautiful thing to watch. It's a beautiful thing to be a part of. I love, even though I got my Seahawks stuff on right now, but don't worry, it's either Seahawks stuff or Buckeye stuff. You know how dads are, man.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I wear is Buckeye stuff. But anyways, to watch it from afar, it just says this: iron sharpens iron, right? And when you start having an offense with an expectation like that, it's crazy. It reminds me of 2013, that season, the Seattle Seahawks, in that defensive line room, right? In that defensive line room, you had, during that time, you had Red Bryant, you had Chris Clemons, you had Brandon Meebane, you had Cliff Averill, you had Michael Bennett, you had so many players on D-line, like not everybody could play.
Yeah.
But here's the beauty. That D-line, and I just gave you the D-line. I didn't even talk about the Legion of Boom, right? Yeah. I didn't even talk about the linebackers. So I saw firsthand what it means when you have, as somebody might say, oh, you have too many guys. No. There's no such thing as too many. That is the beauty, because what happens is when you have a bunch of guys or gals, doesn't matter. When you have a bunch of people all around, you create that competition. And every day, back in 2013, I used to watch those guys. They used to try to beat each other to work every single morning. One guy get there at 4:30, other guy get there at 5. And there was like this fight to be great, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what I see when I see this offense and I see this Buckeyes offense and I see all of the talent. That's a beautiful thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. But I do think offenses in general across the country, they're just getting better. I mean, you just said you've been covering this game, the Buckeyes, since 1984, and the theme of our interview right now has been that the game is changing. Let me ask you,
Yeah.
How much has the game changed?
Yeah.
Oh. You remember I formations and pro sets and twin right, twin left.
Yeah.
Look at where we are today, Tim.
Yeah. Hey, man, when I was coming up back in the I'm 67, but when I first started covering football back in the early 70s, you know, down in Texas where I was growing up, you know, you ran the wishbone. It was bone left, bone right, counter left, counter right. I mean, you know, there were like six plays, but there were four plays in each play. You know what I mean? But it was but it was games were over in 2 hours and 20 minutes. You know what I mean? Now you have high school games that last three and a half hours. Yeah. They spread the field. Yeah. They have fun. I mean, Ohio State runs more plays now, I think, than it did back when the clock wasn't running like it runs now. I mean, right on down the line. It's funny how the coaches get more out of it. They keep wringing that towel, you know, until they get more out of it. I want to ask something before we move on. Have you ever seen – I'll never forget when Russell Wilson came with a Wisconsin to Ohio Stadium. I think it was 2011. And jury was out on him a little bit by a lot of people. I remember just watching him warm up and then the way he played in that game. Ohio State pulled out a win that night. But Russell Wilson was the coolest looking – everything he did was smooth, you know, it's cool looking customer. You've gotten to watch him play now for years. How would you describe him, the way I just did? I mean, just, and he's totally underrated in a lot of respects, but he has won a Super Bowl, should have won another one. Mm-hmm. Before we move on, I mean, do you have the same sense when you watch him that I do? Just everything he does is just smooth.
So I'll tell you another story, and some of you guys, I know I do talk a lot and I do tell those stories, but it's a Russell Wilson story.
Wait a minute, let me interrupt you. That's why I called you. Now go ahead.
So, speaking of Russell, so after that year that you saw him in 2011, then we all know the story. In 2012, he gets drafted. He's a third round draft pick. During that time, they had Matt Flynn, who had just gotten a one-year free agent deal, Seattle Seahawks. So essentially, he's paid to be the starting quarterback.
Yep.
Russell Wilson shows up, and I remember I was outside at the time washing cars, and Russell Wilson shows up first day for rookie camp, and he's walking by. He comes over, introduces, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Russell Wilson." And, "Oh, man, nice to meet you, man." Yeah. So he goes on in. Well, I didn't really think anything of it. I thought what everybody else thought. But I'll tell you when things got different. Well, Tim, when there's mini camp, and right after mini camp, the guys go on a break for about 6 weeks until training camp.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, in between that time, most of the players leave, go home, see their families, because when they come back for training camp, they're going to be there for the, you know, for the season.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, bye week. So the time that guys left for minicamp, that entire time between that minicamp and that training camp, Russell came to work every single day, did not take off.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when I thought, that's different. Yeah. And so it goes back to what we talked about earlier in the conversation, right? It's the work that you don't see that makes the player cool, calm, and collected. So when you saw the Russell. So did I know that Russell Wilson was going to have the career that he had? I don't think anybody can know that. But I'll tell you what, I always saw that man be the first one in, and I always saw him park in the same parking stall every single day.
Yeah, this is cool. You know why this is cool having this conversation? It's because, you know, you've heard of Larry Fitzgerald, haven't you?
Oh yeah,
his dad was a well-known radio dad. Radio dude. Yeah. In Minnesota. I mean, he was, you know, I remember talking with Russell Larry when he was still at Pittsburgh, and you know, his last season, and just one of the nicest, most polite dudes I've ever interviewed. He talked to me like we had been buddies for like 20 years. You know, I know it came from his dad. You know, the little we get to talk to players at Ohio State anymore, I'm sure once we get with G, going to be like that. You know what I mean? I mean, it's something like that, because I really enjoy this, but I mean, I think you're a reflection of your upbringing and stuff. And I wanted to get back. I just wanted to pay you a compliment there. But back to what you and I talked about before we came on the air here, so to speak, you know, like you said, first in, last out, you know, you heard you heard about the comment about Justin Fields when it seemed like for a month there, the idea was chop this guy, inch by inch, foot by foot, chop this guy down before the draft. It seemed to be almost a concerted effort by many people. But when you heard that line that one commentator used, which we won't name him, but said he heard he was one of those last in, first out kind of guys. Work ethic was in question, et cetera. You know, I had his dad on my podcast a week ago, Pablo Fields, great guy, just like you. And he just kind of said he just turned off the TV, quit looking at Twitter, quit looking at social media for the next month leading up to the draft, because whatever was going to be, you know, and stuff. But you're a guy, you're in the news talk business and stuff. When you hear somebody go off half-cocked like that and say something that in essence is the exact opposite of the guy Justin Fields was, I don't know, just what's your reaction and what would be, I don't know, your lesson learned there. What would be your teaching point to people who have a bent for doing that? Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm still mad about that. And it's hard for me to get over because I know how something that serious is. Yeah. And here's why I'm still upset about that last one in, first one out comment. That easily could have been something that person could have had vetted. He could have vetted that particular opinion, right? I don't think it is possible that he got that anywhere from the Buckeye coaching staff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, when I saw it, you want to talk about Justin Fields and his throwing? You want to talk about the game against Indiana? You want to talk about whatever? You could talk about normal stuff. You could talk about whether it's 40 times, you know, the normal stuff that's used to kind of like, hey, let's see what's going on with this player. But when you start talking about someone's work ethic, if that is your talking point, then stay with it. Don't stop. And that's another frustrating part of it is that he stopped. He kind of backed off and he wanted to. No. You said something that was very profound. Yeah. You said something particular that his work ethic, that basically he was the last one in and the first one out. Where did that come from? So I'm not asking him to name his sources, but obviously the source was enough for you to say it.
Yeah.
So if it was enough for you to say it, then continue. So it is interesting. He's the only one to have that particular opinion. Now, usually where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
In this case, this was a bunch of hot nothing. And so it's upsetting. And it's also, so I don't want to make this into, I'm trying to be careful with my words right now, but there's been a pattern of this through sports history, especially as it relates to the black quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hurtful, Tim.
Yeah.
It was hurtful that it continues.
Yeah.
It was hurtful that, yes, it happens to be a Buckeye quarterback. So, yeah, there's a little bit of bias here as far as, like, you know, I want so much success for him. But to do that part of it was so unfair to that young man. And I just got to say, outside of being hurtful, I'm still mad about it. For some reason, Tim, I can't get over it because it is so far from the truth.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
That's one of the things. I mean, I don't have to tell you, Tim, everybody that's listening right now, I'm preaching to the choir about Justin Fields. Like, you want to say everything else? Fine. Don't question that man's work ethic. And you want to talk about, correct me if I'm wrong, during a global pandemic, what quarterback was on national TV trying to fight for his team to be able to play? He could have mailed it in. Could have went back home to Georgia and ended up being a top 10 pick, top 12 pick either way.
Yeah.
So to question him after that, that's hurtful, Tim.
Yeah, of course it is. You know, I mean, and here's the thing, G, you know, I just go, look at the Ohio State-Clemson game. I'm talking about this year's, not last year's. I mean, even last year's, I thought Justin Fields played out of his gourd. But this year, the two top – what I thought were the two top quarterbacks going head-to-head. And granted, it takes a community, right? But it takes a team around you. But not only was he well prepared for that game, which means he did his homework, not only was he pinpoint accurate with his throwing in that game, the biggest game to that moment of his career, but he took a licking and kept on ticking. So in my opinion, in one game, yeah, you can look back at that Northwestern game all you want, folks. And, you know, he's missing his two of his top three receivers for that game. Chris Olave, oh my goodness. And we all saw how some of the other guys weren't running routes correctly. You know what I mean? Things like that. My point is, you can like take that game. Okay, if you're going to lean on that game, well, tell me about this game over here where all was up for grabs was getting a play for a national championship against the quarterback who ended up being taken number one in the draft. And the way you functioned, the way you executed in that game should have gotten you all kinds of buku points, which would have put to rest anything we would have talked about Justin Fields from a doubt standpoint, if you follow my drift. I mean, you know, Wilson's biggest game at BYU was against Coastal Carolina this year. No offense. Coastal Carolina was undefeated, but he got beat, you know. But that was his toughest competition. Trey Lance played for North Dakota State. They didn't even play this past season, you know. Right. You know, Mac Jones, hey, dude, he put the ball on the money on guys moving really fast. That was very impressive. You know, Trevor Lawrence was what he was. But to sit there and say Justin Fields might have been the fourth or fifth best quarterback in this draft, I'm telling you, it's going to come back to haunt a couple of teams. Maybe the San Francisco 49ers, I do believe, but, you know, I can be wrong. But I wanted to ask you this real quick before we go. You're a commentator on things. I mean, you know, news talk, et cetera. Have we ever had a stranger 14 months than we have just lived through? And we're still living through some of it. But when you think about everything that happened last year, from the COVID to the George Floyd to the everything else in that regard, have you ever – you're still a young man. I'm an older man. I've never seen anything as bizarre as what we just finished 14 months. And how did we get through it, in your opinion?
Tim, I was, I'm going to be writing a book. And a lot of times I'm in my notes. Well, towards the end of 2019, I started to get a little writer's block, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know the direction I wanted to go. I knew that there were some things that needed to get in there. And so one of the things I thought was, is like, hey, maybe I need to wait until after my son's first year of college football. Maybe that'll kind of help. It'll kind of tweak some things a little bit, kind of get me excited again. Whoa. I had no idea it would be this. So how do we get through it? You know, I think that we're still going through it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, yes, cases have gotten better. We're not losing lives like we once were, but we're still feeling the effects of it. There's some people that are long haulers that are still struggling with this physically.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that are still struggling mentally. There are businesses, there is job loss. So we're still getting through it. As for how we've got through it, I think America, I think we're resilient, right? I think that the reason why we are who we are through all of the infighting throughout the country, at the end of the day, we wake up, the sun shines, and we try to be better Americans for it. On Thanksgiving of this year was probably the hardest Thanksgiving I've ever had. And it was so because it was during that time that G Jr. had COVID.
Yeah.
And not only did he have COVID, but he was isolated, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm 2,500 miles away. My son is back there in Ohio. He's spending Thanksgiving locked away. These are things that you can't even prepare for, right? You can't prepare for that kind of deal. However, it just makes for a better story. I believe life is all about a story, right?
Yeah,
Usually the best movies we've ever watched, Tim, are movies where there's the rise, the fall, and then there's the redemption, right?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it all. And to in particularly watch how the Buckeyes did things and the late start to the season and then the COVID outbreak. And we don't know if we miss a game and we don't know if they're going to be able to qualify for the playoffs. And then when they do make the playoffs, then they beat that Clemson, they make it to the national championship game. And it's a beautiful thing. So I think that what I've learned, and maybe you and those listening right now, is I think we better learn how to accept the wins. And what I mean by wins is like everything could be a win. A dinner with your family, a win. A walk in the park with your significant other, a win. A job promotion, a win. No more of just taking things for granted, brother.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's how we're continuing to make it through. Like, I'm quite sure for you, you've been covering the Buckeyes since 1984. I'm sure you cannot wait to cover this game again with all of those Buckeye fans in the stadium again. Like, yeah. You're probably never going to complain about a wait going to the restroom again. I guess.
You know what, though? I just went to a race because I covered the Indianapolis 500 last year, you know, and there were no fans allowed. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It might as well have been the Mars 500. You understand what I'm saying? Because yeah. It's the people that make life special, man. It's the crowd. It's the ambiance that makes college football different, that, you know, that was not there last year. You know, yeah. I know you're a big sports fan. I can just tell. And yeah. That's the stuff you really, truly go, man, I hope you never see that again. Because, yeah, it's always about celebrating with the guy next to you. You know, I'm talking about if you're a college football fan, or it's all about if you're in the press box. Oh, my God, did you just see that? Did you see that catch?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Did you see G. Scott Jr.? That'll be this year. Did you see G. Scott Jr. go over the middle? You know, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about. You're exactly right. I mean, that's what was missing, was the collegiality of everything, especially in college football. And, yeah, I hope we do get back to that. And, you know, and I hope – I mean, I had a couple of podcasts with several people just talking about, you know, just the race relations thing. The thing, you know, just everything that blew up this past year was just – over the top. Everything was over the top in the strangest of ways. And I just hope you kind of, it's cool now to look back on it. Like, when I had Josh Myers on, you know, former Ohio State center, and it seemed like it went really fast now that you look back on it. But when you were living through all this, it was going, what's tomorrow bringing, man? You have no idea, but you're like me, you know, you're ready to celebrate and move on. Right. What do you think? You think we'll see a semblance of a normality? What's your sense out there where you are this coming season?
Man, we need it, Tim, right?
Yeah.
Like, we need it, right?
Yeah.
It's all, it reminds me of when I was on punishment as a kid, Tim. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And finally, my mom, dad, finally say, okay, we're going to let you go. And boy, when you just got out, you're like, you know what? I'm gonna take advantage of this. I'm gonna get the best grades that I can. Yeah. I'm gonna be a better person. So I believe that going forward, I think there's potential and there's going to be a better tomorrow, right? And it's better for all of us. And so I equate Buckeye football, college football. I mean, we need that, right? Like,
yes.
We need like the Buckeye fans. I mean, come on. I mean, we got family, we got work, and then there's Buckeye football, right?
Yeah.
We need that right there. And so you start thinking about that Thursday night, not that anybody's paying attention or counting, but that Thursday night game that's coming up, September 2nd, is it, or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Against Minnesota. Yeah. So you start looking forward to that. You start thinking about what you're going to be doing, what you're going to be wearing, what new Buckeye outfit you got going. So it's just going to be exciting, man.
I was going to say, man, they're going almost halfway to your house to play their opening game. You're going to be there, right?
Nah, you know what, man? I'm going to go ahead and stay on here, man. I'm going to wait and go out to that September 11th game, I believe it is. And that's against Oregon Ducks at the Shoe.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and wait for that, man. I can't wait to. Okay. I got to tell you, that's the one thing that I think that that I missed out on. Like last year, I'm like, wow, I wanted to see my son play, but to see my son play in like we're talking about no fans there, it was rough. So I just want to take that in. I want to take that in at the SHU, full capacity to watch the Buckeyes out there on the field. It's going to be a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, I mean, it was freshman year and you didn't get, yeah. Wow, that's crazy. Hey, gee, this is great, man. You and Ursula must have a pretty good show. Do y'all get pretty good ratings? I'm sure you do, right?
Yeah, we do, man. And Tim, there's a lot to talk about, right? So yeah. You talk about news talk. I mean, as soon as I'm done talking to you, I'm getting ready to go show prep for tomorrow right now. So, yeah. But that's easy, right? I just pop on all my news affiliates and check out what's going on the local and national, and we're good to go.
G. Scott Sr., ladies and gentlemen, the one and only. I mean, we just hope Junior's half as interesting as you are, my man. I really appreciate you coming on the Tim May podcast.
All right. Appreciate you, sir.
It was an interesting conversation, right? Awesome with G. Scott Sr. I mean, the thing about it is, like I pointed out, he hosts a radio talk show every day, so he knows how to talk.
He does, and he's not afraid to voice his opinion, which is, you know, got to know him the little that I have. You know, that's, you know, one of my favorite things about following him on social media or when he reaches out. I mean, the guy has a great perspective on a lot of different things, very well-rounded, obviously knows football too. And he's fun to have around to follow here.
Yeah. And his perspective though, I want to add this. It's not just him just railing, you know, I mean, he talks to people. I mean, he gathers opinions about things and forms his own thoughts on them. And just, he's not just sitting on a mountaintop somewhere, just screaming, you know, and that's what I like about him. And his Twitter, he's a must follow on Twitter as far as I'm concerned. I see his stuff every day and enjoy it. You just enjoy a guy who is not afraid to put his opinions out there, but you also know they're well-founded and well-grounded. And that's what it's cool to have a guy like that on my podcast for sure. And, you know, the other thing he pointed out, as you heard, you know, he has ridiculous respect for Ryan Day, not just as an X's and O's guy, not just as a head coach who leads the team out onto the field on game day, but the way he leads these guys through their lives as Ohio State football players. And especially that was especially true during this past year, dealing with the pandemic, the ups and downs, which led to the ups and downs of the Big Ten season, et cetera. And, you know, it's funny how the more you talk to these parents, the more they really like where their sons are playing football.
Yeah. And I think it came up again last week with what happened, you know, with the therapist. And when we talked about this on Thursday.
Wait a minute. Let me interrupt. Massage therapist. Go ahead.
Unlicensed now massage therapist. You know, that the way it was handled by Ohio State when we talked on Thursday, I sort of was in that camp of why did you make this public? It could have been embarrassing, you know, to the players, and they might not have wanted it. I was still, maybe I didn't know exactly where I was going to come down on that. But in the end, the more I thought about it, the more it seemed like a stronger reflection of leadership in the way that, first of all, you had to have the entire coaching staff and every player on your roster buy into what they were doing to have this investigation. So that tells you, you know, they were listening to those people and trusted that it was going to be handled right. And then in the end result, to put it out with, you know, all the documents, all the investigation, and the fact that there was nothing there. Well, imagine if somebody was nudged in a year or two to look into this case and the way that could have been presented, and Ohio State would have been playing catch up to say, hey, there weren't, you know, criminal situations involved with this. There weren't NCAA violations. The fact that they took control of this story from the start, you know, is different than what might have happened or what they may have had to deal with if it was presented. If the story was initially presented in a different way that didn't lay out all the facts of criminal charges, licenses being revoked for other reasons, no money, no NCAA violation. So that's just another recent example, I guess, Tim, where I think that it's reflective that Ryan Day and Gene Smith and Kevin Wilson or Brian Hartline, if we're just talking, you know, go back to G Scott, they trust what these people are doing, and the families are pretty happy to have them in Columbus because they trust what's happening.
Hey, let's just jump immediately away from that now. You know, I wanted to ask you this. I mean, you know, you and Jeremy Birmingham, a.k.a. Berm, a.k.a. as I call him, Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama. Actually, I just started calling him that just now.
Don't do it.
12 seconds ago, I started calling him that, but he knows I'm messing. You guys took that tour of through the heart of Texas. I mean, when you look at the way, if you'd let people follow you on a graph, it was pretty interesting. a lot of the places I used to hang out, but I digress. I know you didn't get to Lufkin, did you?
Not this time.
Yeah, got real close to it. But the bottom line is, they were in spring football drills, right? I mean, yes. People in Ohio high school football have no idea what that is and evidently have no interest in having it. But it does allow players to advance in terms of their skill level, et cetera, football. And it allows people to come by and see them doing that. Right. I mean, those are the big two payoffs from that. And it is kind of interesting to be in a state where they do take football a little differently.
Yeah. I'm going to guess, Tim, that you probably had that conversation with people in this state for 40 years, because you grew up around this, where, you know, spring ball is not a completely new concept to a state that loves it down there. And a lot of others in the South have this. And we're talking about 15 practices and a spring game, which, you know, maybe doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But, and I hadn't really thought about it that much. I know Urban Meyer had talked about the value of that, and Ryan Day's talked about it. I'm sure that the previous coaches at Ohio State that you covered to some capacity have talked about that. I mean, me seeing it last week was really the first time that it put in perspective. Okay. Cause that was a real practice I saw at South Lake Carroll. They were hitting, they were going live. You know, Quinn Ewers is throwing around 11 on 11. They're installing the whole deal. I mean, it was a normal practice. And so if you have 60 of those throughout your high school career in Texas and this Ohio prospect has zero.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that they want to have well-rounded kids, that they want to play multiple sports. So I asked these coaches in Texas that I talked to, like, oh, well, they're allowed to do track. They can play other sports. You know, it's not like that's the only thing you're allowed to do. And it's a limited amount of time anyway. Like I said, 15 practices. So, you know, I don't fully understand that opposition to it in Ohio. This is the first time I've actually come away thinking, well, that's probably not fair to kids in this state who want to be, you know, Division I. They want to be Buckeyes. They want to go to the NFL. But even that, if they want to be in the MAC, like other kids from Texas that may have had comparable ability are getting almost a full year's worth of development that Ohio kids do not. And that makes them better prepared to go to the next level. And
yeah,
just that's, I was really surprised by it, Tim, because I knew that it existed, but it was hard for me to wrap my mind around how that translated to the next level.
Yeah, I've told people a million times. I'll tell them a million and one. You know, the great thing about spring football, the guys who benefit from it most aren't the guys you would think. It's not necessarily Quinn Ewers, because he can get his receivers together and go out and run 7-on-7 type stuff any day of the week, any time of the week. But it's the linemen that really benefit, you know, not only from, you know, understanding technique better, but growing into their bodies, you know, especially in high school, from a freshman to a senior offensive lineman or defensive lineman, you're a totally different looking dude coming out. And those are the guys, that's the part of the game that really benefits from spring drills. Not that you need to go out there and hit 24/7, but I remember, you know, this idea that you can't do more than one sport at one time. Lufkin, where I grew up in Lufkin, Texas, had spring ball every year. They even had a spring game. You know, it was pretty funny. A lot of people were at the spring game, but also in I think 1970, I think it was 75, Lufkin had, or 76, Lufkin had the number one mile relay team in the United States, high school wise. And three of those four guys were on the football team who were also, okay, you know, taking part in spring drill. So, you know,
yeah,
you're fast. Number one, that's the number one thing. You know, I would always like to have been Jesse Owens' track coach. That's what I always say. I would have gained fame and fortune, you know, or Usain Bolt's track coach. Imagine that. But then past that is, yeah, you're getting to advance also in the sport that for the most part can really take you places for linemen, especially. What's a lineman? You know, he's probably not playing shortstop, you know, on the baseball. Now, Jim Lachey is probably a great example of you know, he ran the 100-yard dash and for his St. Henry. But so, yeah, you're exactly right. I want to move on, though. What has caught you something that maybe you haven't revealed or didn't talk a lot about real quickly on that little tour you and Berm took that just stands out with you right now? From, it doesn't even necessarily have to be football, something you saw, something you experienced. I know I want you to get me a photo of you and him with fake beards on in front of Green Hall there in Green, Texas, G-R-U-E-N-E, because ZZ Top, you know, that's where, you know, that's not where they're from, but they gained a lot of fame from playing that dance hall, et cetera. But give me one example of something you really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's always cool to, I mean, my parents have been living in Green. We've been going there, I guess, maybe for 15 years or so. And
yeah,
it used to be kind of a once a year situation. We found that, you know, Memorial Day weekend and float the Guadalupe River and go see concerts at Green Hall and see Roger Krieger and, you know, a bunch of our favorite, you know, what became our favorite Texas country bands. And my parents loved it so much, they wanted to retire and live there. And so I always will take any opportunity to go there and to, you know, have Berm, you know, maybe see that briefly and experience that was pretty cool for me. Cause I think everybody should, it's just such a cool place to be. But beyond that, you know, as I was previewing that trip with you last week, just thinking about, you know, being on the road at all, and
yeah,
you know, the differences in the, you know, most places down there, we didn't have to put on the masks, but, and then obviously the CDC is changing things as we speak, but, you know, businesses still had it. People were respectful where it needed to be, but going out to a football practice and seeing that live and not having to wear a mask was great. Felt normal, you know, traveling around, you know, as I said, when we were in Virginia and North Carolina to see Travion Henderson and Evan Pryor was like the last time that we were allowed, you know, to go across state lines and do that for a while. So I think just the opportunity for, you know, Berm and I to go do this again, like normal, like a normal year. I think last week just kind of, that was the, other than getting the shot, which is just a personal thing, I think collectively seeing the world starting to do normal things.
Yep.
Kind of was, you know, meaningful, I think, because I still, 2 weeks ago, somebody sent a question of the day. So what do you think the odds are of a full house in the horseshoe in week, you know, week two against Oregon? And I thought, well, I don't know. It's still things, seems like it's going to be 50% or Big Ten might restrict it. I was not ready to say it's going to be 100,000 again. And you look now at what's happening in the first week of June and plans for the Reds and the Indians and you know, FC Cincinnati or the Crew or whatever else. I mean, I think that's going to happen now.
I do too.
And I think that's exciting because I guess we've all been so burned by what happened over the last 15 months that you don't want to put your hope and optimism in the wrong place.
Let me interrupt you. What if the Big Ten, for some reason, and we're talking 3.5 months down the road here, but for some reason still comes up with the idea that you can't have, what if Ohio State said, yes, we can, and just decided to do it? What does the Big Ten, how does that poker game go? How does that Texas Hold'em game, pardon the pun, Texas Hold'em game go from that point? Meaning, what do you do with your most influential, your most well-known, recognized, your most potent college football program? What do you say then if you're the Big Ten? Well, isn't it about time somebody flexed their muscles? Or as Dean Wormer said, it's about time somebody put their foot down and their foot is me in Animal House.
You and I live here. We know how many people would say that program needs to be and can only be Ohio State and that they, you know, don't need the Big Ten. We don't need to go back and have all those conversations.
Right. But I'm just saying.
Yeah. I think that what's more likely to happen in this case, if they have another showdown, Ohio State, I think, is going to say, we need to do this and we're going to do this. And I think the Big Ten recognized that when they shifted gears in spring. I mean, look at Nebraska's attendance for the spring game. They deferred to local state authorities that was really the first time that they did so because they went through all of last year. They didn't change their mind. You know, there were some people in Indianapolis, but not many, not as many as they could have had. I think that they recognize that a conference-wide policy is doing damage to programs that, you know, need to fund not only their own program, but help drive the wagon for the entire league, namely Ohio State, but certainly not exclusive to them when Penn State or Nebraska or Michigan, you know, can put that many people in there and draw eyeballs on television. So I think that – I don't think that that's going to happen this time around. I think that will be up to local restrictions, regulations, in which case Ohio's probably not going to have any in 2 weeks.
Yeah, just think if they only let like 60,000 in for the Oregon game, just think of the ticket resale market, what that's going to be. I'm talking about September, what is that, 9th or whatever it is, or 11th. Anyway, get the dates mixed up in my head. But anyway, bottom line is, just think, well, unless there's a massive upset in Minnesota the week and a half before, which I don't see coming. Real quick, before we go, I told you I was going to ask you this before we started. Your top five or six nationally coming out of spring, from what you're hearing, I'll give you mine. They may be exactly the same, but I'm gonna give you first shrift since you're, even though you're my co-pilot, you're still my guest on this flight, even though I rely on you to land the plane if I become incapacitated, which could happen any second now. Your top five or six nationally, I'll give you mine and we'll move on.
Yeah. Well, I think you wanted me to say what I thought the rankings would look like, right? Because.
Yeah. I'm going to preface why I brought this up, because the interesting thing about college football, the great thing about college football, the interesting thing about college football is if you are in the top five at the beginning of the year, someone has to leapfrog you in terms of politically being more attractive than you are, as much as anything else, as long as y'all are both undefeated. Yeah. So anybody who says the polls don't matter, they do matter. That's, you know, the field for the college football playoff is set by a political body known as the playoff committee, selection committee. It is, in final analysis, a poll, a vote. So it does matter where you start. Now go ahead.
Yeah. So I think the way that it, because if I had to file a ballot right now, it would be different than what I think the actual national rankings would be. I think that's the point you're making. Alabama is going to be number one because they've earned the benefit of the doubt and the brand, and people aren't even going to bat an eye about the number of players they've lost because they have a bunch of, you know, four and five stars waiting in the wings, just like Ohio State. Those are the two best programs in the country.
And they know who their quarterback is and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Talent acquisition. Yeah. You know, and that's also funny because it's not like, you know, it's going to be held against Ohio State in this poll. That is also your point.
Yes.
That there's uncertainty about the quarterback. Well, you know, we've only seen one or one and a half games out of Clemson with the backup at DJ Ungalala.
It's easy for you to say, but go ahead.
Not easy for me to say. And we've seen practically nothing at Alabama, even though we know who their starter is going to be. So, you know, they're going to be treated differently, and that's fine. If I was casting it, I would still leave the reigning national champions at number one, and I would have Ohio State at number two. The way I think that this will work out when the rankings come this summer, whenever the first ones are released, I think Alabama will be number one. I think Oklahoma will be number two, boosted primarily because of the more established quarterback and the respect that people have for Spencer Rattler, which might be a little bit exaggerated at this point. But, you know, Oklahoma's also proven they're the class of that conference. I expect that Clemson will be probably coming in at number three based on the reputation, again, of that quarterback. I think the voters will have Georgia at four and Ohio State at five. I think putting Georgia ahead of Ohio State is pretty laughable. Honestly, I think the same about Clemson and Oklahoma. But I think that that's how the vote will play out.
Okay, you know, when I look at it, I'm not going to go through my explanations of everything why. Alabama, then I have Clemson, then I have Oklahoma, then I have Ohio State number four, then I have USC or Oregon number five, because I really – that game, the second week of the season, Ohio State, Oregon is going to set a lot of dominoes in motion one way or the other, headed toward the second week or first weekend of December. I think it's the first weekend of December. And But yeah, I mean, you know, I refuse to put two teams from the same conference in my top five, you know, just because, and I know Georgia's going to get a lot of run with JT Daniels, you know, their quarterback. Well, you know, we saw what that did for him last year. Florida's going to be very strong, but I refuse to put two teams from the same conference, at least in my preseason top five, for that very reason. The interesting thing about the Ohio State situation, you watched the spring game just like I did. You keep your ear to the ground just like I did. We got to see a little bit of practice, a couple of practices too during the spring. I think any one of those three quarterbacks, C.J. Stroud, Jack Miller III, or Kyle McCord, can produce big numbers for this Ohio State offense. My big question mark coming out of spring, and it's still there, is defensively, is Ohio State going to be up to snuff? The problem is that's not going to come to bear probably until either the semifinal or the finals of the college football playoff. If you follow my drift, I think they can outscore everybody in the Big Ten if they have to. Oregon is not going to have a great defense. They're going to be pretty good. But you see what I'm saying? We're not going to know really about Ohio State until it gets to that point of the season. That's the interesting thing about college football compared to the NFL too, is, you know, you play like competition more often than not in the NFL. You don't in college football. But so Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and USC or Oregon. I think USC's prime. But you know another team to keep your eye on, and you know this, is Cincinnati. Of, you know, because there's a lot of buzz for Cincinnati right now. A lot of people thought they got kind of short-shrifted last year and stuff. And if Luke and his group and the Fighting Fickles can run the table again, you know, what do you think? I mean, that's going to be very interesting, right?
Yeah, they're gonna have a strong case, and then they, you know, maybe if they'd finish that deal, you know, in the, what were they in, the Peach Bowl? Is that the game that they were in?
Yeah.
It seems like so long ago. If they'd held on to that one, maybe it would have further enhanced that case to say, hey, we beat the team you sent on us last time. We're ready for a bigger challenge, because you know they're going to be the class of their league, hands down. You know that defense is going to be salty even without Marcus Freeman there anymore.
Yep.
Get a quarterback, established veteran quarterback for one more year. They've got a lot of pieces there. Hey, I can tell you for sure there's nobody in that top five or top eight that you named that wants to play Cincinnati. I can promise you that. I don't know that they're how many they would beat if they had to play them all in a row. Probably not a lot of them, but for 1 or 2 weeks and a chance at them, I wouldn't sign up for that if I was in Clemson or with uncertainty. That wouldn't be the defense that I wanted to face.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Awesome Ward. I'm Tim May, and I'm glad to see Awesome Ward and Berm completed their trip to the great state of Texas with no injuries incurred. And, you know, by the way, you know, everybody knows I was born in Alabama 11 years, moved to Texas, lived there 11 years, and have lived in Ohio since then, since I was 22. I'm now 67. Anybody can do the math. That's not even an ACT question. But you know why I love living in Ohio? Because I can step out the back door of my house right here where I live out west of Columbus, out west of Hilliard. And most times I don't have to worry about stepping on a snake, you know, and I hate snakes, man. Yeah. And as much as I love visiting your great state of Texas, I never liked being there, never liked being there in May, June, July, August, September. In my hometown, where it was like 95 degrees or hotter every damn day. That, I was going to say a bad word, that stunk. You agree, don't you? Awesome. Wyoming, my man. I mean, everything's downhill from Wyoming, as I like to say.
Yeah, it's not my favorite climate, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, but hey, tubing on the Guadalupe River on a nice hot day. Now that's a different matter altogether. But you can't do that 24/7 is the point. Everybody can't go tubing 24/7.
That's right.
I'll leave everybody with that thought. But for Awesome Ward, this is Tim May. This is the end of another Tim May podcast. I appreciate you folks listening, and we'll see you with the new one next week. Thank you very much.